2 minute meditation starts now. Prayer.
God, please lay aside everything I think I know about addiction, alcoholism, the big book, the 12 steps, this workshop, myself, and especially you, God, so I may have an open mind and a new experience with all of these things. Help me see the truth.
This one is called thoughts. Thoughts are everything. What we see or feel is only what's in the mind, because thoughts are everything. We are responsible for our world, of course, and everything in it. Most of us aren't so eager to accept all of that responsibility. The turmoil and bad luck can't be our fault every time. Even though this set of beliefs forces us to give up blaming others, it also empowers us. Our journey to real happiness can be made more quickly when we accept our rightful role. It's really quite fun to realize that we are who we want to be. We think only what we want to think. We can speed up or slow down our journey at will. The problem is, how do we first understand and then get comfortable with the idea that thoughts are everything? It helps if we share our observations and experiences with others. We'll see how differently each of us categorizes and interprets events. That, in turn, reveals how our thoughts manage us. I don't need any thought to, I don't want today. I'm in charge. I'll talk more about that in just a minute. But wanted to wrap up the ninth step and launch us into the tenth step by talking about these things that are often called AA's promises, which are actually the ninth step, because the ninth step promises, because if you know how the book's organized and you see that back on page 76, it says, let's look at steps 8 and 9. And then if you were to see on page 84, it says, this thought brings us to step 10. You would realize that these promises that people call AA's promises fall in the ninth step. And I had a buddy once that was in a class at a treatment center, and the girl that was running the class said, well, these are actually AA's promises. And he says, no, they're the ninth step promises because they come in the ninth step of the book. And she says, no, these are AA's promises. I went to school for this, so I know. But I'm sure all of you have heard the ninth step promises read at meetings. But I'm going to change them a little bit and read them the way that I think that they should be read. If we are painstaking about the phase of amends, we will be amazed before we are halfway through with our amends. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness as a result of making our amends. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace as a result of making our amends. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience of making amends and all the steps to this point can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear as a result of these amends. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows as a result of making this amends. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change as a result of making amends. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us as a result of making amends, because we are no longer fearful to see those people that we've harmed, and we've paid back all the money that we owed to people. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us, and we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves, because I went and faced all those people that maybe wanted to hurt me or didn't like me during my amends. Are these extravagant promises? Fuck no, they're not. They're being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, only as quickly or as slowly as we're actually making our amends. They will always materialize if we make our amends. You know, and the problem is that people come here and they hear those promises read at the meetings, and then they don't understand why that shit doesn't show up in their life. And you know what I can almost guarantee you 100% of the time? They ain't making their amends. So they ain't getting what the promises promise. So you want that stuff to show up in your life? Make your amends.
So, the first nine steps, the launching pad into the world of the Spirit. This thought about making amends, I'm on page 84. This thought of making amends brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. So for the first year and a half of my sobriety, I mean, I thought the 10th step was just saying, hey, I'm wrong, as whenever I remembered that I was wrong, and was doing 4 through 9 sort of like throughout the course of the day, like a spot check inventory really quick. No downside to this at all. The upside to what I'm about to describe is limitless, though. Because what happened to me is did I tell the story about Nari and the CDs? Mm-hmm. All right. So, got to share some of my story with you. 9 months, somewhere in about 9 months, I'm at a clubhouse in Atlanta and walking out of the meeting, and there's this guy who stands outside after the meeting, and he just gives out CDs. And so he gives me these two CDs. I look at them. At this point, I'm not really aware that there's such things as like circuit speakers or any of that stuff for some reason. I'd heard of Joe and Charlie. I take that back. Joe and Charlie, I'd heard of. But this idea that people like used recovery audio as a way to deepen their understanding of the steps and what we do here, foreign to me at the time. And I was on fire at the time, and I just put these two CDs in my car door, you know, where I had my CD, you know, I had a CD case back then, for you young bucks. I got to about 16, 17, 18 months clean, and I was struggling. I made a lot of amends in like the first 6-7 months, and then I just sort of stopped. I was sponsoring a bunch of guys, but I was behaving in a way that just was not reflective of someone that was relaxing and taking it easy, right? I was spending money like I had a lot of money when I didn't. And I'm at a meeting, and I believe, if I recall correctly, I'm at that same clubhouse that I got the CDs at 7 or 8 months before. Actually, it was like 10 months before. And so I'm bored in AA at this point, right? I feel like I missed something because I got a bunch of sponsees. My ego is just massive with all the people I'm sponsoring. Fuck if I'm effective or not. I got 6 or 7 sponsees. That's
He's
all
a
that,
collector.
Yeah, a collector. Oh, damn, I was. And so I'm uneasy at this point. I know nothing about meditation. I can't sit still. If I'm at home, I got music playing. I got my laptop in front of me. I got the TV on, and I'm calling people in the fellowship. What are y'all doing tonight? What are y'all doing tonight? I can't stay alone. I need the fellowship, right? And so I'm leaving this meeting, and I'm just in a way. And I get in the car, and I have this intuitive thought. I don't know where it came from. Maybe God. I don't know. The universe has this thought of, hey, put the CD in. All right, I look at the CD. It says Mark H on it. All right, hollow bone is what it says. I put this CD in, and I will never forget it. The meeting starts with, I love meetings that start with meditation. That's how he starts his talk. And I was like, what is this? And so I listened to this guy describe the 10th step in such a way where I had to ask myself, what book is this guy talking about? Because that's not the way I was taken through the 10th step. It was just some inventory that you do every once in a while, and then you try to apologize when you piss people off. No, the people that taught me the 12 steps that way were big book people. They were Joe and Charlie, but they just didn't emphasize consciousness or awareness and that type of the spirit, that those aspects of the spiritual realm. And so then I'm done with that CD, and he puts on this other CD. I put on this other CD. It has this guy. It says Chris R. Ingram, Texas. And then I put Chris in, and like, I was like, he was like a cheerleader. It was like a pep rally for God. And so then I went on this mission of trying to find people that knew these guys, and I stumbled across my buddy Mike, who was being sponsored by one of Mark's sponsees. And that guy became my sponsor for 7.5 years. And as a result of being taught the steps in this way, out of the big book, but just with a different interpretation at some points along the way, the 10th step became something else. The 10th step became by far the hardest step to practice. Right? Self-remembering and self-observation are two extremely difficult things to observe as you're walking through the day, because we fall into autopilot rather quickly throughout the course of the day. So the day it's a spiritual warfare, the way I look at it. And with the spiritual warfare, I'm trying to not be an autopilot, to be aware of like how I'm sitting at times. Can I acknowledge the presence of God in my breath? You know, am I aware that my energy changes when I'm around this person versus this person? So you begin this process of self-examination. And the way I do it, or the way I was instructed to do it, was I worked with certain words in this paragraph. So it says, we continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we clean up the past. They reference the amends now twice. We've entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to... Has anybody ever given much thought to what the world of the... what is the world of the Spirit? Anybody want to take a stab at it? There is no right or wrong answer in this situation. But it's always like we just gloss over that real quick. Oh, I've entered the world of the Spirit. Well, you know, what is that? And for me, entering the world of the Spirit is this acknowledgement that there's a God and a power that pervades all of existence. Like, it is present in all of life. And I want to bring that into all my activities if I can. Right? I want to see the face of that thing called God as often as possible as I walk through the course of the day. That's the way I look at it. For me, entering the world of the Spirit, that's what it means to me. You have to discover your own meaning for that phrase. Because you gloss over it so quickly. I mean, it's an important thing. How the hell do you know you've entered a new room? Right? Or a new phase of development? Whatever it is, you got to look around and say, okay, what's different here? What's different from the world, the way I was living, the world of the material versus the world of the Spirit? So these are important questions to ask yourself. It says our next function is to grow in understanding the spiritual life and being effective in the human life, is the way I look at that. This is not an overnight matter. It's going to continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. So when I'm taking someone through the steps, and I don't do this with every guy I sponsor. Bobby, did we do this? The note cards?
No.
Note for watch, ask, turn? Okay.
You have homework, by the way.
Yeah, no. And so what we do is I give them a note card. And I say, I want you to get a 3x5 note card, and I want you to write the word watch. And I want you to put one in your pocket, put one on your mirror, put one on your nightstand, put one on the refrigerator, put one on the door as you're walking out of the house, put one in your office if you have an office at work. And as often as possible throughout the go, when you see these words, watch, just begin to observe yourself. Right? And then sometimes they ask me, what are we looking for? Well, we're going to look for resentment. If you start to feel wrong, you know, you get sideways with somebody. Fear, selfishness, dishonesty. We're just observing. Right? We're just observing. They do that for 1 week. The second week is the second instruction. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. So now we're going into prayer. So we need to build a relationship with a power greater than ourselves. Well, how do you build relationships? What's the most important element in a relationship?
Communication.
Okay? And so the second week, they get a new set of note cards out and they write watch/ask. Right? And they put the card, they take the other cards down, and they put these cards up. The third week, we're going to move on to the next thing. It says, we discuss with someone immediately and we make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. All right, I'm going to get to that instruction, but I'm going to the next one. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. I add some things to that. Turn your thoughts back to what you're doing. Be present in the thing you've got in front of you right now. So the third week is watch, ask, turn. And the fourth week is the next paragraph. And we've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol and all mind-altering substances. So the fourth week is watch, ask, turn, cease. And that's the practice. And then you're going to try to incorporate that into how you walk through life. This is the walking around step. This is the step. So when they say we continue to take personal inventory, I'm constantly trying to practice the inventory. So that's how it was for many years. I can't say to you today that I can't say with any truth that I practice this step the same way I just described it to you. It's changed for me. So now it has one core thing. I want to acknowledge the presence of God often as possible throughout the course of the day. And how I do that is through my breath. And so, I mean, it's a wild exercise to show yourself how you're not even aware of your breath throughout the course of the day, because you're so over-identified. We are so over-identified with what's going on in our mind. And so that practice brings me present, because at the end of the day, the 10th step is about being present, right? And observing. Right, and so as you begin to practice the watch, ask, turn, and cease fighting, it's going to send you in all kinds of different directions. I'm not telling you got to end up where I'm at. This was introduced by I have a spiritual mentor that I meet with once a week, and he introduces me to cool spiritual things that I incorporate into the 12 steps. I have yet, nor do I think I ever will, replace what I do with the steps with that. But it is just as important, because I'd love the investigation, and I love that I'm still curious about this kind of stuff. Alright? And so the 10th step is the awakening, the stay awake step, the intent step, the vision step. Right? All of these things can be incorporated. But I think at the end of the day, it's about this one sentence in the back of the big book on page 568 if you have a fourth edition. Is that the second page of the Spiritual Experience Appendix, yes. Royal?
Yeah.
Look at that first full paragraph. It is one of the most enlightening paragraphs in our big book. Most of us think this awareness or consciousness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence. You guys think essence is an important aspect of something? Might be the most important. The essence of spiritual experience. Our more conscious members call it God consciousness. Reading comprehension was never my strong suit, but they pretty much just told me that the core of my spiritual experience is based on how often I think about God. That's what they're saying. And so for me, that's what the 10th step has turned into. As a result of that, we get to experience this time, which is seldom visited, which is called now. You guys understand what I just said? We are seldom now. We might be a week from now. We might be last week. But we are seldom where we're at mentally. And that's what this step's about. It's about the practice of trying to... It's almost like trying to meditate throughout the course of the day. You can look at it that way as well. Now, Brandon talked about... Does anyone have a question about the way I just described the 10th step? Yes?
So, I've been trying to work in the 10th step a lot lately anyways. A question I have is, when it says, watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear, is that strictly in our actions, or is that in our thought patterns?
Both.
Okay.
Both. Yeah, because you know, you've got your thought life doesn't always, but can generate words that come flying out of your mouth. And those words, more often than not, may have an action associated with them. Right? And all of that's going to have a consequence. Everything we do has a consequence. Right, and so when you're looking at the 10 steps, sometimes it's in hindsight after something happened, and then you like sort of what Brandon did. That was like an active 10th step he did at the hotel. Right, it wasn't really a 9 step amends. Now that I'm thinking about it, it was a 10 step amends. Mm-hmm. But that was an active 10th step. Right, he showed his ass on the front end, and then he's like, "Well, this is how an active 10th step works." Right, and that's what we're doing here, you know, because we're all going to fall short. But being awake and aware is what this step's all about. All right. All right. The 10 step promises are the most, I think, the most powerful promises in our big book. For a guy who thought he was going to smoke crack until the day he died, we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol and drugs, for by this time sanity will have returned. Tarek is seldom interested in liquor or drugs. If tempted, he recoils from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor and drugs has been given to Tarek without any thought or effort on it, on his part. Hold, whoa. What do you mean no thought or effort? You ever got any? I've put in a lot of thought and effort. Oh. But none of the thought of an effort has been about not drinking or not using. It's been about working the steps. And so when I understood it that way, I was like, oh, I get it now. That's why there's little thought or effort. And then it says it just comes. That's the miracle of it. Tarek, I'm not fighting it, nor am I avoiding temptation today. I feel as though I've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. I had not even sworn off. Instead, the problem, which is the illusion that I ever had a choice, has been removed. It doesn't exist for me. I'm neither cocky nor am I afraid. This is my experience. And this is how I react so long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. Conditional statement. I will keep living this way if I stay in fit spiritual condition. And so I told you about all the surgeries I had, and I was put on pain medication every single time. And so, you know, before being brought to a spiritual path, that empty hole inside of me, the brokenness that I couldn't remedy on my own, I would turn to anesthetics in the form of drugs and alcohol in order to treat my brokenness. And so when I took, you know, Percocets and Vicodin and Oxycontin and heroin, it was treating something spiritually, believe it or not. Something that I needed to feel, something other than what I was feeling. And that's what they did. They were a very powerful solution for a very long time. You guys hear me talk about crack all the time, but I loved opiates. Don't get me wrong, I loved them. And I remember the kidney stone, and I remember when they shot me with that morphine in the hospital. It was the first time I'd gotten high in a long time. It was wild experience, but you know what? It wasn't treating any type of spiritual discomfort. It wasn't treating. There was no anxiety at the time. There was no depression. All right, I had the normal, you know, struggles of life at that point. I mean, granted, I was entering a very rocky part of my path, but with the kidney stone, it was cool. So they gave me Percocets. They sent me home. And it's wild because at the bottom of page 31 or 30, let me see here. There's something that's really interesting. At the bottom of 32. Oh, no. Hold on. Bottom of 22. We know that while Tarek keeps away from alcohol and drugs, as he may do for months and years, he reacts much like other men. We are equally positive that once he takes any alcohol, whatever, into his system, something happens both bodily and mentally, which makes it virtually impossible for him to stop. So as I was taking the Percocet, I was observing something happening bodily, right? He'd start itching, you know, you can start to feel yourself getting high. But nothing happened in my mind other than I started to notice excuses that I could give to my wife at the time so she would, instead of waiting 4 hours, we can do the next two in 3 hours, right? And like figuring out ways to like get to the bottle when she's not. This is all. I never did any of this. I watched it play out in my mind. You know what happened after that? Recoil as from a hot flame. Marcy, come downstairs. Get the pills, I'm done. Right? That experience happened to me 6 times in over those surgeries I had. 6 times I had that experience. I was talking to my buddy Dan about it, and he gave a wonderful talk about the first step, and we were talking about it afterwards, and he's like, you know, pain medication is here to treat the pain, right? But when it's no longer treating the spiritual void inside, it's interesting how quickly that 10-step promise becomes a reality, right? Because it's not treating anything. All I was observing was the physical reaction of my body. But when you're mentally having an adverse reaction, then you're sort of screwed, right? There's no hope after that. Right? We tend to forget the physical craving is not just in our here. Especially for meth and cocaine, the physical craving is here. Because our mind is, our brain is an organ in the body, so therefore it's still right to call it the phenomenon of craving and a physical craving. Right? It just happens to like live in our mental capacities as well. You know, but that's the way it goes down. So I had a real life experience with this tenth step, right? Because the 12 steps treat the internal conditions. You always hear about people that share stories about, you know, I was sitting in a meeting the other night and this person was sharing about they don't go down the liquor aisle anymore, or they don't hang out with certain people, or they don't go to concerts anymore. And I've been around long enough to tell you I've heard those shares. I've heard them over the years. I think you probably have too.
And that's, you go to the barbershop enough times, you're going to get a haircut. Yeah.
You know, Widespread Panic's my favorite band in the world. I've seen them 400 times. I've seen them well over 100 times since I got clean and sober. I see them with my old friends on a regular basis. I was at New Year's 6 years ago. One of my best friends has been bouncing in and out of these rooms since I got clean, so since 2007. He's had 3 years one time he had 4 years. It's been rough the past several years. I remember sitting on New Year's Eve, and we were having fun, we were dancing, and all my friends had bags of Molly, and they had bags of cocaine, and then every once in a while, I get one of my friends, who's just trash, tries to hand me the bag. I'm like, I'm good. And I remember Jeff turns to me during the show, and he says, man, don't you just want to do, and he was sober at this point, he had like a year sober. He goes, don't you just want to do it sometimes? Don't you miss it at all? I mean, that looks so fucking good. And I'm like, Jeff, man, when he turned and looked at me with that bag, I didn't see anything. It was sort of invisible. Like, it has no effect on me whatsoever. He could not wrap his mind around that. That is the position of neutrality. That's possible. And so I'm never going to sell you on a process that's going to limit you going back and doing the things you love to do. That's crazy. But that's what happens when you teach triggers and you focus on triggers. Like, protect yourself from the triggers. Because what does that mean? It implies that you can keep yourself sober. You can keep yourself clean.
No human power.
You don't need God if you've got a trigger list and it's working. So,
better not leave your trigger list at home, though, because you might forget. Wait, is that on the list or not?
All right. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our past accomplishments. We are headed for trouble if we do, for Tarek, crack cocaine is a subtle boat. Tarek is not cured of his addiction. What Tarek really has is a daily stay of execution contingent on the maintenance of his spiritual condition. Every day is a day when Tarek must carry a vision of God's will into all his activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go constantly with Tarek. Tarek can exercise his willpower along this line. All he wishes, this is the proper use of the will. We gave up our will on page 63 and we got it back on page 85, 22 pages. 22 pages of action. All right. We already had the self-will, God's will conversation, so I'm not going to go back there. But I do want to talk about this daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. If you guys want to have some fun with this 12-step process, it happens in the 10th and 11th step. That's where the fun is. What kills me over and over is I watch people work these steps and they do very little with those two steps. Right? For most of them, the 10 steps is about an inventory to solve a specific problem so they can control and manage their lives. That's just what I've observed. And the 11th step, they figured God out. They don't want to investigate. They're not curious about other things, which is fine. It works. If what you're doing works, have at it. But there's a morality in AA, probably the only true morality, which is if what you're doing is not working, it might be time to try something new. If what you're doing is working, rock on. And so this is where the fun is. This is where all the juice is. I remember Mark said that one time. The tenth and 11th step is where all the juice is. It really is. You know, there was a brief period of a few years where I was like, "Now all the juice is in the 12th step." But now I'm going backwards. I'm saying, "No, all the juice is in the 10th and 11th step." There's a lot of fun that can be had in these two steps. You know, if you're willing to relax ideas that are fixed and investigate, and then make a decision that I'm going to move forward with the ideas I came with, or you know what, I just read some really cool books, I had some really cool conversations, I implemented some new spiritual practices, and guess what, my mind has changed. I'm going to move on with these new ideas and see what happens over the next however long. You know, as my morality has changed, you know, my conception of God has changed as I've developed on the spiritual path. So what my description of God from 12 and a half years ago is quite different than my description of God today, and that's how it should be. So I'm not a guy that believes in dogma or doctrine. I think they sort of stunt spiritual growth, so I stay away from them. I don't think rules and regulations apply in the spiritual realm. I just don't. It constricts it. I want it to be expansive, and it's all about these steps. The 10th step can be so deep. It's as deep as an abyss, and then I don't know where the bottom of the abyss is. So that's how this step is. You can take the word watch and work with that for the rest of your life. Just that one word. I mean, self-remembrance and self-observation. Right? And when I say self-remembrance, it's more of a remembering my essence. Remembering what connects me with you, not remembering Tarek, the ego. Right? That's not the self I'm talking about. I should have clarified that earlier. I think that's all I want to say about the 10th step.
I feel like reading this, so I'm going to. And you can listen to me or not. It's called Clarity. Can you see a sound? Can you hear a light? Can you unite your senses? Can you turn inward? What we all are seeking is clarity. Forget about religious rationalizations. Forget about elaborate explanations. What we all want is clarity. What we abhor is ignorance. Ignorance confuses us, brings us misfortune and sorrow, and makes us miserable. If we have clarity, then we can live with equanimity. It is a misconception that spirituality brings everlasting happiness. There's no such thing. Sadness still comes to the wise, but unlike most people, their clarity of mind allows them to see beyond the temporal emotionalism of the moment. They are far-seeing, and so happiness and sorrow become the same to them. True clarity is more than just being smart, more than just being wise. Clarity manifests from meditation. It comes when you can unite all the faculties of the mind and unify them into a magnificent light of perception. It is hard to talk of this in anything but mystical terms. Our language is unfamiliar with the frontiers of the spirit because few have ever seen those limitations, let alone describe them, but let's try. If you unite sound with vision, then you will create light. That light is the concentrated force of the mind. It is by that brightness that truth is revealed. Step 11 suggests just prayer. If you go to a meeting, they're talking about step 11. If 20 people share probably 18 of them are going to be talking about prayer. There might be those two rogue agents that try to talk about meditation, and everybody just kind of goes, ugh. Because it's a concept that most people can't grasp. Prayer is easy, right? We do that in church. We get down on our knees. We have that thing that we do. We've got a bunch of set prayers that they told us to memorize when we were kids, that we had to or we wouldn't pass the class. Maybe some of you did that. I did. Never looked to see what the prayers meant. Never tried to analyze them. Memorize the words. That's it. There's a book called The Sermon on the Mount by Emmett Fox, and there's the back part of it. He analyzes the words of the Lord's Prayer. You know what? You have no fucking idea what that prayer means. It is one of the coolest things ever if you understand the words of it. But nobody takes the time to explore it. Just like nobody takes the time to explore steps 10 and 11. They just don't. But I'll tell you, you could look around and you could tell the people that are practicing steps 10 and 11. The way that they seem to float and walk through existence is different than anybody else. You see it. You can look in their eyes and there's something else going on. There's an awareness and a knowing that people that actually practice these steps have. Can't fake it. It's impossible to fake it because it's an experience that they're in the middle of and it emanates from them. It's very clear. I remember back when Tarek had his program, I walked into one of the apartments. Never seen this guy before in my entire life. I walk in and the guy goes, "Whoa, that guy's sober as fuck." And I chuckled and I walked over and introduced myself. And he said, "Why do you say that?" He goes, "I don't know. You got something else going on." I walked into the room, guys. That's it. That's all I did. I didn't say anything to anybody. I wasn't doing anything. I walked in. Something in his spirit saw something in my spirit, and something happened and he acknowledged it. That's it. That's all that happened. I wasn't doing anything special, but it happened. You guys see it and you don't know that it exists. I remember I got sober. I was struck sober. Sorry. AA didn't get me sober. Let's be real clear. AA did not get me sober. I was delivered to my first AA meeting with over 2 weeks being dry. Okay. What AA did, and the steps did, was it took me through a process that got me hooked up with that thing which is keeping me sober. Okay. And what I had identified in a lot of those meetings is that I would walk into a meeting that, say, there's 30 people, and there's four or five of them over there that look like something else is going on in their existence. And then there's the rest of the people. And I was very curious what those four or five, what's going on over there? Because there's something different. The way that they experience the reality that we're all experiencing together is different. How is that? And at some point in time, as I had picked a sponsor and he was fumbling through the steps with me, he suggested that I go to this retreat out at a monastery because this guy, Chris, from Texas, was coming out to speak with his brother and he thought that it would be good for me to go out there and listen to him. He knew a guy that was involved with the retreat, this orange-haired guy named Tariq Khalil. And he said, "I've already called him and told him that you're coming. And and he'll be looking for you. Okay? So I go to this retreat, and there's somewhere between 30 and 60 people in this room, and I walk in the room, and everybody's got that shit going on. The lights are on with everybody in that room. And it was like, whoa. So I did what I do. I started investigating. And what I had come to the conclusion of is that all these people in this room had actually worked the steps. And they had worked them essentially as outlined in the big book. What I know now, because I would say probably at least a quarter, if not more, of the people that were at that retreat, I still see today. And I have personal relationships with most of those people, and they all are doing these steps, 10 and 11, like mad men and women. Like, they're into this stuff, right? And they're sponsoring the world, and they're doing all this stuff too, but like, they're grounded in this stuff. Like, this is the good dope. This is like the real, this is the stuff that, like, I love talking about steps 10 and 11, and I love, like, just kind of inching up on spirituality and, like, pressing the limits of what people can accept. And at some point in time, I see that, oh, we went too far. I just lost them. Because the limits of where you can go with this, you can explore this forever, and you'll never reach it. You'll never reach whatever it is that you're looking for, because it morphs and it changes and it grows, and a new book gets put into your life, and you read that book and you're like, wait, I read something about this in a different book, because it says that there's many helpful books. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. And so you start reading one book, and then you remember something that you saw in another book, and you go back and you read that book, and you're like, whoa, where did this come from? Because a brand new door opened up in a book talking about something that you never saw was possible before. And so we start to explore the depths of what prayer and meditation actually are. So let's break it down real quick, and let's just look at prayer initially. And I'm going to ask you my favorite question in the world to ask. Is, what if your thoughts are actually prayers? I asked that the first time we were here, and I got my favorite response to any question I've ever asked, ever. A guy in the back of the room said, well, then those would be some pretty fucked up prayers. But just for fun, let's explore that. If a thought actually is a prayer, would you endeavor to clean up your thoughts? Let's say your thoughts actually do have the ability to shape your reality and change your future. Would you change the way that you viewed the world? Would you explore that? Would you endeavor to explore spirituality and work these steps at a deeper level so that your thoughts were cleaner? Because if you do that, because I've done it, and I've done all sorts of trainings and other modalities that are outside of the 12 steps that have helped me focus that and regulate that. I've gone to workshops on meditation. I've explored meditation. I've tried guided meditation. I've tried trance meditation, walking meditation. I've gone to meditation retreats. And you know, the cool thing is what happens for me as I really explore meditation is it slows stuff down to me. You know, they've done a study recently to identify that flies actually experience reality 10 times faster than we do. OK, Okay, they tried to do this through some computer simulation, trying to figure out how flies work and what their perspective is. And what they've identified is that when you are swinging your hand at a fly, it's like slow motion coming at them. Whoa. Hey, look, hand. Wouldn't it be cool if there was a way for you to do that with yourself? To slow your mind down so that you could see things that other people didn't? To perceive the little bits of reality that other people are not aware of? Meditation's where that starts. It gets rid of the clutter. It gets rid of the noise. I drive about 8,000 miles a month. And I'm in the car probably 36 to 40 hours a week. And in a lot of weeks, 75% of that time is in dead silence. I was a guy that had the windows open, was drinking something, had the radio blasting, probably trying to carry on a conversation with somebody, all at the same time. And now I'm okay with silence. The chatter of 1,000 monkeys is not going on in my head anymore. Meditation's the gift that gives you that. Meditation has given me the ability to see where my thoughts come in my head and to actually identify the most that I've seen operating in my head as I've been operating. They show up in file folders. It's kind of weird. My mind's real logical and digital. And I have actually played with thoughts in 5 different file folders out here while having a conversation with somebody. And I can see it. I'm not special. The only reason why that's happening is because my mind isn't cluttered with a bunch of stuff. The stuff I'm talking about is in books all over the place, guys. Books that you can explore, things that you can do, practices that you can engage in. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. I'll throw the part that's in the 10th step about vision in that too, and creating a vision for your life and trying to live up to the vision and identify it. Where do you want to be? Are you hoping to be incredibly successful and have lots of money and have the greatest woman that you could possibly imagine? Or are you just okay with what you're going to get? Because most people want all those things, but they never set a destination. They never chart a course. They never try to get to where they want to go. I just hope I'm going to be rich. I just hope I got some long-lost uncle that dies and leaves me a bunch of money someday. Yeah, that's going to happen. Or do I want to chart a course and pray and meditate on the right way to approach that course? And work with the vision and organize my thoughts and concentrate my energy in a way that allows me to actually achieve that goal. There is so much that you can do in these steps that when I can guarantee you that there's very few people in this room that I could have a conversation with you that you don't think I'm absolutely crazy and out of my mind. Because of what I've seen, what I've done, and how I know that you can access spirit world. I'm convinced that there's a couple pieces of information I can throw at just about any of you, and you'd be like, okay, cuckoo. But it's things that I've experienced through the 11th step, in the confines of these steps. It's endless. And these are the steps that people don't talk about. Tarek and I literally could talk for hours and hours and hours on this stuff. I get phone calls from people all the time that want to explore it until they don't. we start talking about some kooky stuff, and then they're like, okay, and then they don't call anymore because it's too far out there. This that we're talking about is, this is the stuff. And then what's really cool is that you can go and play in the spirit world stuff, and then you have a newcomer that comes in and you sit down across from him and you go access for yourself, not directly for him. What do I need to do here? And you're guided by this intuitive thought of, ask him this question, do this, take him through this exercise. And then you increase the energy vibration of the world by helping that person come up. And one person at a time, you change the planet just because you're actually doing this stuff. Sound fun? So, like I said, step 11, suggests prayer. Or all this other stuff too. And you can explore it, and you can ask us about books. And we could spend hours and hours and hours talking about it. But I'm pretty confident what you would rather hear from for at least an hour or something like that is the speaker that we've got coming up after this. So, did you have anything else? Mm-hmm. So... What time is it?
Oh, let's instead of 9 o'clock, Jay, you ready to 8:30?
Jay Byrne!
See you guys at 8:30.